is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Al Lowe. He is best known for the game Leisure Suit Larry. It's great talking to you, Al.
Hey, it's nice to be here.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pilliter, and Brandon Adamson.
Hey, Al.
Hi, guys.
Brandon, weren't you telling me that you did a Leisure Suit Larry theme song back in the 90s?
No, I didn't do a song, but I would say that the music from those games was kind of inspirational for. I think that the music is very memorable. I think when I played Leisure Suit Larry 6, I probably hadn't played that game in like 20 years, but I still remembered the music. It had to make it very like the kind of like 90s, like early 90s, like keyboard sound is like, you know, the kind of MIDI-ish quality. It's like what I associate with I associate like that sound with those games from that time period.
Dan Kaler did a great job with that music. He although if you haven't heard it on an MT32, that's what he really wrote for. So if you heard it on MIDI or some sort of, you know, MIDI equivalency thing, you probably didn't hear it the way Dan intended, but he did some great music. I loved what he did with the game. And it was really fun, you know, after I wrote the original Larry theme song 30 years ago. I was so fascinating to give that theme to each of the subsequent composers of the game music and then watch how each of them changed it, altered it, updated it, you know, just made an arrangement that was their own and had lots of their input and quality.
So Leisure Suit Larry, was inspired by, or kind of based on this video game from 1981 called Soft Porn Adventure?
The original idea was that I would update that game because at the time it was for sale, it was the hottest selling game on the Apple II. Now, this was a time when Apple had only sold 100,000 home computers. And Ken Williams at Sierra had sold 25,000 copies of Soft Porn. And everybody I knew had a pirated version of it. So it was pretty much on every Apple II computer in a certain period of time back then in the very early 80s. In fact, when Time Magazine did its very first column on home computers, Soft Porn was the story they did, and the cover was the illustration that went with that article.
The character, Larry, he's this computer geek, and he has a midlife crisis, and he's interested.
I don't know that it's a midlife crisis so much as it's trying to get his life started. He's 39 years old, and he's never been laid. I'm not sure that's midlife as much as adolescence, is it?
What was the inspiration for the character?
I was 39 years old, and I can't say that. I tried to come up with a, this is kind of hard to explain, but if you've ever seen the game Soft Porn, it was a text-only game, and it had no central character. There was no protagonist. The game talked to the player as if the player was in the game. So it had lines like, I am but your puppet master. I will do what you command. Tell me what to do. And then you would type, go north. And it would move a screen, you know, to the north. And open door. And it would obey these commands. But there was
Zork.
No central character. You know, it was a Zork game. So, there was no central character. So when we did it in 3D, we knew that we needed some sort of central character, a protagonist that, and I wanted to do a comedy. So I thought he needed to be kind of dorky and out of touch and stuff and somebody that I could make fun of. So in the game itself, people often ask me, are you Larry? And it's always no. And I'm the narrator. Al Lowe, the voice of Al Lowe is the voice of the game. Larry is the guy I'm making fun of. Well, there was no voice for the first five games. For the sixth game, we hired a voiceover actor from Hollywood named Jan Rapson.
I remember, I actually never played any of the Larry games. In fact, I was a big Myst fan. I loved the
Well, then
Myst
you
games.
Need to be removed from this call.
Well, I'm trying to learn actually something from it, but here's my wisdom from it.
All right, that's
from the Larry games. I remember when I think Team 17, they did Worms. They had their own version of the game called, I think it was Box Office Bust or something. And that was like their own version of like if you made Conker's Bad Fur Day mixed with the Larry property. And supposedly it was like really bad reviews. And yet when I watched the long play of that game, when somebody played online, it was pretty funny. And I know Patrick Warburton was in it, Elaine's girlfriend from Seinfeld, you know. And it's funny. It's, I don't know. There's this kind of sleaze culture to Larry, which is kind of funny, and it's not that normie, you know?
Yeah, I think you would think that if you hadn't played the games.
Yeah.
That, my games, because my games were far less about the sleaze and far more about mocking people who are that way. The two later games that Sierra had hired done without me, Box Office Bust and Magna Cum Laude were the names. Both those games thought that my games were about tits and ass. And in reality, my games were about humor. And while there were some funny moments in both those games, they didn't really catch the idea that it was that you. I don't know. Maybe they didn't have guts enough to laugh at the protagonist of the game, because Larry was an anti-hero, and that was at a time when there weren't many anti-heroes in games. That was a pretty rare thing. So I think that was another reason why the games caught on, was because it was not like every other game that was out there. It was a different twist.
What were some of the reactions that you were getting? Were you getting criticism that the character, like critiques from a feminist about the character being offensive?
You know, I got a lot of comments from people that I met, from women that I met over the years, who said, "Oh, you wrote that Larry game? That's a sleazy, sexist game." And inevitably, when someone would say that to me, there would be another woman nearby who said, "Have you ever played the game?" And they would stand up and defend me. And it's like, if you played the game, you'd know that it's not that way. It's the opposite of that. The game is really about a dumb guy and some really smart women. And in all cases, almost all cases, I'm sure there's an exception somewhere, but in almost all cases, the women get the upper hand on Larry and are always the more intelligent, the smarter, the more clever, creative characters.
I completely agree, and you know, having played some of those older games, you know, I can remember, you know, I was in like maybe fifth or sixth grade when the first one came out, and I remember seeing those games in the computer store, and I remember thinking that, like, you know, I was like a horny kid, so like I wanted to play them. Like, I actually thought that they were going to be sleazy, because, you know, in those days, you know, if you were a kid, like, you know, just like an 8-bit like nude scene was like a huge deal. You know, like, I remember there was like a scene in Golgo 13 for Nintendo where, like, you know, you see a silhouette and, you know, you like turn off the lights and you sleep with it. And it was just like, you know, that really gets going as like a fifth grade kid in like, you know, in 1988 or something. Like, that was, you know, that wouldn't cut it today at all. But when you actually play the games, like, they actually kind of, you know, they make fun of everyone, I think, equally, but you don't really, Larry isn't like a threatening character because he's just so inept, you know. It's not like, if you were just like, if you didn't play the game, you might think that it was some kind of like a sleazy game that really, like, you know, disparages women in all these groups. But, you know, like you said, like, the women are come off much better than Larry does. Like, he basically just like, you know, stumbles around and just like is stupid. But I also think that, you know, part of the reason the game has kind of stood the test of time is that people, you know, most guys, I think, can actually identify with Larry a little bit more than they would want to admit, you know, even though that's not like their whole lifestyle. I think that you can relate to that. I think on some level, because you everyone has been in a situation with the girl where they were interested in and they got shut down in some kind of humiliating way. And so you can kind of identify with Larry a little bit on that level.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons the games were popular is because every guy has been shut down at some point, and every woman has dated a jerk like that.
In the game, Larry commits suicide if he loses. I mean, where did you get the kind of inspiration for that aspect?
Well, we didn't write the rest of that game. Whenever you die, that means you did something that we didn't write game for. That was our way of saying, hey, we don't have any game for you to do that, so you're dead. We'll start over. Hope you saved your game. Yeah, back then, the tools were very primitive. We didn't have the kinds of game-making tools that are available today. I mean, when I tell people that we did all those games before Photoshop was invented, people look at you and they go, what? How can you do graphics without Photoshop? And the answer was that guys at Sierra invented all the tools that we needed. They invented an editor that allowed us to do background scenes and put objects in them that had depth and planes, so you could walk behind a post and the characters that were behind, let's see, the pixels of the character that went behind the post weren't drawn. And we did that on the fly. That was a really modern advance for its time, you know. Before that, people had a limited number of places that a sprite could go, and the sprite would have a special set of drawings that omitted the portions of the character that were covered by the post. And we did that on the fly in software. That was a heck of a deal. You got to remember, we're talking about really slow, really old computers, and really limited graphics. Our graphics screen was a 320 by 200, I believe. 240 maybe. 320 by 240, I believe. Which is just, you know, that's like a Apple Watch or something, you know. It's terrible.
I was very familiar more with the King's Quest and Space Quest games. I do remember those, where it was like you're walking around, there's like 0 out of 200 points, and whenever you do something, you know, you have to explore the environment, right? There was there's a series of cartoonists, Homestar Runner. They made a joke game called Peasant's Quest, where it's like a joke on that kind of resurrection of those quest games. And I find that Leisure Suit Larry was maybe, I guess, the humorous version of that, where it's kind of being meta, where it's like you're playing those
games. It was a
little
meta. Yeah, I didn't know that word then, but I think I kind of did that, yeah, because I often broke the fourth wall and, you know, and talked directly to the player and so forth that other people didn't.
What were some of the inspirations for the aesthetics of the game? There's a very kind of distinct color palette of a lot of pinks, light pastel colors, turquoises. And it has a very kind of an 80s, early 90s feel. And it does remind me of this new online genre called Vaporwave, which is more recent. But back then, what were some of the inspirations for the aesthetics of the designs?
Well, the inspiration was we were trying to get a game out in time for Christmas.
Yeah.
and so we only had so many colors. When we started the first Larry game, many people played it in 4 colors. I mean, that's just insane. I thought it looked better in black and white, to be honest with you. But a lot of people played it on CGA, which is 4 colors. And it wasn't until, maybe 1990 or so that people actually had 16 color graphics. And it wasn't until even later that they had 256 colors. So we were very limited in what we could do. of the 256 colors, we reserve 16 of those for our own use, so and Windows use, and so we ended up with 240 colors, and we did the best we could. But yeah, it was, and plus it was, you know, honestly, it was a product of its time, and the artists that we had working on it, I think they chose colors that were popular at the time. I know. We built a home in 1989, and I think we ended up with one bathroom that was mauve and another one that was taupe, you know, and another one that was, what's that other green color that was really in back then?
So, like a teal.
Teal, that's it, yeah.
I like that. Oh, that image right there, I think, is from the in Leisure Suit Larry 3 from 89, but I really like that one.
The reflection, I see it.
Well, yeah, what's interesting is that, you know, a lot of those aesthetics have come back, you know, recently and are just beginning now to be appreciated, you know, for like a long time, maybe in the like late 90s or early 2000s or whatever, that was like, you know, no one was interested in that stuff or even recognized it as being good. And kind of like you said, you know, like, you know, you weren't, it was a product of its time, like, a lot of these things that people are like really appreciating these artistic choices were just like you like working within like very meager limitations, you know, technologically and maybe financially, you know.
You guys know I'm really old, right?
Yeah.
So I remember when 1950s furniture was new. And then about 20 years later, you couldn't give the shit away. It was like, you know, you would take it to the dump. And now that's the hottest thing is mid-century furniture. It's like all this stuff runs in cycles. It all runs in cycles. And I think, you know, you're beginning to see nostalgia now for 80s and 90s stuff. Just like my generation had nostalgia for 50s and 60s stuff. Yeah.
And I even see that nostalgia in Leisure Suit Larry. Well, they're kind of making fun of that was back in the 80s and early 90s, so he was wearing a leisure suit, so they're making fun of the 70s. But I think there's one thing where he goes into this glass house on the tropical island, and it's like the mid-century, like, space-age aesthetic.
You know, I don't understand why anyone would want to play the game and just finish it as quickly as possible. Like when I play these old Larry games, like this whole fun of it for me is just to like hang out and like walk around and explore like the world, you know, for as long as I can. So I end up, you know, hanging out at the casino and, you know, I could play the slot machine in for like 2 hours just sitting there. And I like just walking around and exploring, even though it's a very, you know, the settings are very limited. Like
there's a time limit of 8 hours.
Yeah. Well, there's a time limit of 8 hours, I think in the original game. But I'm thinking like I could play it way longer than that. Like I, you know, I'm not even in a rush to complete the quests or anything. Like I just like, you know, walking around and, you know, even in the fifth game, you know, I like to, I really like the airport aesthetic of those settings at the airports, and so I like hanging out at those airports, even though there's like no one even there to interact with. It's like you can just look at the stuff on the walls and whatnot. But I like
the
music.
Airport in Las Vegas, the McCarran.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's actually like any actual airport, but it kind of reminds me of. It does look like a 1970s or 80s airport, except that you know there's really like no people in there.
Is it the one that says it's like in Spanish Aeropuerto?
No, the one I'm talking about in Leisure Suit Larry 5. There's three of them. There's like an LAX airport. There's an Atlantic City, and I think there's a Miami, and even I think there might be a New York one too. I can't remember, but basically like, you know, the whole fun of the game is to, for me anyways, is just to explore and just like talk to people and just find weird stuff and like listen to the music and kind of enjoy the ambiance of the game. So it's like, why these modern like people today that want to play it and just like try to beat it as fast as they can. Like, I mean, that's like the whole point of the game is just to like, is just to kind of like be leery and waste time like dicking around, you know? Like,
yeah, there's this weird distinction between like game versus non-game versus game as art. It's pretty popular today in the quote-unquote indie game scene to be like, oh, my game is more than a game, it's an art piece. And actually, you are, I don't know, there seems to be this strange mix, especially if you like go on like PS4 or like some of the Xbox One online games that you surf. They're like these, like, you have to beat these games, but they're very like, you have huge art direction, right? It's not like video games. There's some like indie games that are like reverting back to art aesthetics only, and it's becoming more of this.
I know what you're saying, because some games are just all about winning, but like the game, like The Legend of Zelda, which I grew up playing, I mean, that game was all about, I mean, obviously you did have to win the game and you had to defeat each level and defeat the monster, but there was this whole sense of exploration in the game.
I'm the kind of person where I kind of grew up out of that phase. Like, I understand games like art, like Myst and The Manhole, and even I loved The Neverhood growing up. Doug Tenapole, you know, the clay animated point and click game. You know, supposed to be that, but it's all really exploration, enjoying that aesthetic. It's great that there's artsy fartsy games, but it's not everything. I really don't like that excuse when somebody goes, oh, video games are art. You know, it's great to walk in that James Turrell museum. That's cool, but that's when things become virtual reality or for artists. Yet then there again, there are games like, you know, that you just want to have fun. You get the stick in the yard, you're throwing a frisbee out of yourself. It's a solitaire thing. You could be, you know, playing. Like, I'm kind of now the Luddite when it comes to video games. I like to play board and card games. My favorite game ever is Cosmic Encounter. And like, I just will play physical board games now because I find that as a form of play. It's not necessarily about the win or lose condition, but I do understand anybody who's like a Bobby Fischer, a master of chess, or an athlete for that matter, where you want to be good at these things, but we live in this obsessed society where it's like this whole gamer culture. Like, what does that even mean? Like, being a good chess player, just masturbating, just putting on the Oculus Rift goggles and going out and having your anime girlfriend to give you a blowjob?
What do you think about that picture I sent you from Leisure Suit Larry 6?
You know, when I think about it, it does a lot like Alicia Silverstone. Now when I compare pictures, but I don't know. I don't know. It looks like some broad with some tits holding, you know, her nipples.
Well, she has an upside down smile.
Hmm.
Just her signature trait.
Her signature trait.
Yeah, I don't know, but as someone who was like around back then, like, I don't remember anyone like knowing who Alicia Silverstone was until Clueless came out, like in 1995.
Yeah, that's
like,
why.
Even though she was in. She was in movies before that, but, like, you know, nobody had ever heard of her. I don't even know anyone who had seen the Crush until after Clueless became popular. Then it was like, oh, she did this other movie. Like, but it wasn't like the Crush was big in, like, 1993 or anything. I never heard of it. Like,
I think it's probably just a coincidence. I think it's interesting.
You know, we're talking about colors, because some of my memories, I remember really young being in, like, elementary school, and we would have like Windows computers and some of these other games. You mentioned that if, you know, someone playing Leisure Suit Larry with only four different colors, one game I thought was like totally out there when I was young was The Manhole, which was basically like this.
Oh yeah, that was the one.
It's a black and white, it's all drawings. And basically,
yeah, it was black and white. Mac, it was a Mac game, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And basically you were in this, like, you climb a beanstalk and you're in a castle, yeah, and you're on a boat. And I was just like, whoa. I just think that was, like, mind-expanding, and it's like, it wasn't a game, it was basically virtual reality. I'm like, this is where the future of video games are going. But it was black and white. It was black and white, and so now that things are in colors, they redid the game in color, and they made it more in CGI, but I felt that the colors shouldn't be, you know, you can make people open to different realities. I mean, even if you play Zork or any of the text adventure games, you know, that was basically mind expanding too, that you could tell the computer to do what you want. And I think it's funny too, even to think that people would get, you know, pornography, the softcore and adventure text game, you know, and think, you know, have a little fun on that. There's something thrilling and exciting. Now, today you look at it as kind of embarrassing. You could just look up porn online for free, but
yeah, I have people sending porn into my house all day.
Leisure Suit Larry was more kind of a, like, well, it's I guess by today's standard it would be a hentai, but it was more like softcore animation porn. It wasn't like hardcore.
Well, it wasn't really softcore, because softcore implies that there's sex, and this was a guy who couldn't get laid, as opposed to somebody who was getting laid all the time. So.
Yeah, no, if you were actually looking for the actual softcore scenes, you know, to get off on, or so, it's definitely not, you're definitely going to be disappointed, you know, if that's what you're in it for. One thing I also remembered recently was that in Leisure Suit Larry 5, there was a Tramp casino, which is like a parody of like a Trump, you know, casino in Atlantic City. Yeah. And how we talk about like those aesthetics and things coming back with like, you know, the vaporwave and whatnot, which is kind of a bringing back those aesthetics and that time period. And then also Trump is president now. So it's like, it's like,
what?
Even though he's been kind of, he's still been around like this whole time. Like, I think a lot of people, I really associate him with kind of that era. Like, I remember that him being, you know, with like Marla Maples and in the news and stuff in that time period. And, you know, I think that the Trump casino in Vegas was built around like 91, one of those.
So Vegas,
it's interesting that when that came back.
You're thinking of Atlantic City, the one in Vegas.
I think Atlantic City.
Yeah, in Vegas,
no,
that one's
no, right, but well, the one in Vegas looks like it was built in the 90s. You know, it definitely does. Because we were there, we were outside. So it definitely is 90s architecture. But I think the one in Atlantic City, he shut that one down, or he was going to get rid of it. I don't know if he did.
Or
I remember reading that
Trump,
a few years ago.
The Trump Taj Mahal, I think that one was shut down.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, in Leisure Suit Larry, I think it's the first one, it does take place in a parody of Las Vegas called the City of Lost Wages. And then you have, like, instead of Caesar's Palace, it's Caesar's Phallus.
Yeah, I tell you, I did what I could.
I like the VGA version of that game. I just replayed it the other night, and... I forgot. Like, it's the one thing that definitely
it runs okay. What operating system were you using?
I used DOSBox
on
Windows.
Uh huh. Yeah, it's
on,
amazing
on Windows. Yeah,
amazing.
But
it's still...
one thing. Oh yeah, one thing that really distinguishes those old games from the new ones that like is that you can actually get stuck in the game. You know, if you forget to get something or If you like run out of, like, if you're accustomed to playing like newer games, like they have all of these built-in things so that like you can screw up whatever you want. But in that, like, if you don't, they're just merciless. Like, if you didn't save or anything, like you ran out of money and you didn't have enough for a cab and you weren't at the casino where you can't get more, like you'd actually could get stuck in the game. And then there's also like a lot of the deaths are just like totally unpredictable. Like, I think I was playing it for like 2 minutes and, you know, you try to flush the toilet and it overflows and you drown and you die. And it was like that happens right at the beginning. So I'm like, okay, well, clearly I'm going to have to save like often, you know, because I would not have predicted that.
You know, my favorite slogan that I invented, right? Save early, save often.
Yeah, well, that definitely comes in handy, like, in the gambling part, because I don't know how easy the gambling would be.
It also comes in handy in Word documents.
Oh, right, because if you don't write down the phone numbers,
I meant in general, in life, when using computers, save early.
Your document will be lost when your computer crashes. That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's happened to me with like editing my shows. I've done a lot of work, but my computer crashes and I forgot to save.
Yeah,
it's happened to all of us at some point.
What do you think about the character Quagmire from Family Guy? He looks very similar to Larry.
Yeah.
Really? I don't know Family Guy. I know of the show. I've never watched it.
There was some. I was looking this up prior, and I was like, you know what, Larry? I don't know if whether that the character design of Glenn Clagmire was pretty much influenced off of Larry. But I was looking this online, and then supposedly I came upon this gossip article that said Sierra trying to put lawsuit against Fox because it looks too similar to Larry. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was just
Well, Quagmire has a whole kind of like he's like kind of based on like the 1970s swinger. He is kind of like a more successful version of Larry, I guess.
Yeah, he looks a little bit, not much. I wouldn't invest my money in a lawyer to go sue them.
I just figured out it was an April Fool's article, so I was fooled myself.
Okay.
That makes more sense.
So Sierra was actually based out of Fresno, and I briefly lived in Fresno, but when I lived there, I had no idea that so much great innovation came out of that city.
Well, actually, it wasn't in Fresno. It was about 45 miles north of there in a little town called Oakhurst, which was right on the way to Yosemite National Park, right on Highway 41. And, if you ever went to Yosemite, you went through Oakhurst, and you went right past Sierra's building. They were right on the main drag there.
Have you ever seen somebody made a song that was like, Feeling Like Leisure Suit Larry, which is like... based on the character, but he relates it to like online dating. Have you seen that on YouTube? It's a pretty popular video.
Yeah, I have.
It's great.
Yeah, I liked it.
In Leisure Suit Larry 6, which came out in 93, there's a character that looks a lot like Alicia Silverstone. And at first I thought like, oh, is it based on her? But that was around the time the film The Crush came out. And I mean, she must have been like 15 at the time. And the character is obviously a grown woman. So I don't think it was based on her, but I think it's just kind of a mysterious coincidence.
Well, you know, artists take their inspiration from many places. And I'm sure, you know, the guys, when you're trying to come up with a character, you end up looking at the characteristics of... Well, maybe this would be of interest to you guys. So when we created a character, we would describe what her traits were. What, you know, if there was something physical that she needed to possess, then I would say that. I would tell the guys that. But oftentimes it was much more about personality type, that she was like this and she was like that. Well, then they would go and look for actresses or models or just people that brought to mind those characteristics. And then they would not draw a picture of that person, but rather, you know, take something from this one and something from that one. And, that's artist inspiration, I guess, is how you'd say that.
Yeah, I read that one of the, the characters in the VGA version of the first game was, I think, based off of just some girl in like a Guess ad or something like that. I remember reading that somewhere. I don't know how accurate that is. Yeah. But
I don't know that,
you know, cause when you look and you see the close up of them, like then, they're more detailed. Uh-huh. So I read somewhere that, I can't even remember the character's name, but you would know it. It's the one who ends up like, you know, tying him up with the ribbon and leaving him, you know, in the hotel room. Like that's the, whatever, uh-huh. Apparently that image of her was like, you know, at least based upon just some girl that the artist had in a Guess ad he saw.
That's possible. Mark Crow, when he did the original game, I think he was 19 when he did all those graphics, and you got to understand he did all the animation and all the background scenes, and designed the box, designed the title screens, created all that stuff in 1 month time while he was working full-time on Space Quest. In other words, in 4 weeks of his spare time, he came up with all the graphics that we used in Larry 1. So it was a simpler time back then, you know?
What was the inspiration for Leisure Suit? I think it was either the second or third one that came out in 89 that takes place on the tropical island.
Well, I wanted to write off a vacation I took on a tropical island. well, you know, I think in Larry 2 shaped Larry 3 because Larry 2 was designed for still for people who played with floppy disks. Larry 1 was only floppy disks. I think we had a hard drive install program, but you know, an installer on the disk, but it was they were very rare. People just didn't have that kind of money for computer hard drives back then. And as hard drives got cheaper, of course, more computers ended up having them. But still, with Larry 2 in 1988, I designed that game specifically so that it would fit on six floppy disks, and I made six levels that you could play an entire level without changing floppy drives and floppy disks. And that was a big problem back then. You know, people don't know this or remember it now, but you know, in the old days, if you would go from one place to another, you had to take out disk one and put in disk two, or you had to take out disk four and put in disk five. And that was a pain in the ass. And so I designed Larry 2 specifically so it would be like beads on a string. In that when you finished Los Angeles, then you got on the cruise ship. And when you figured out how to get off the cruise ship, you got onto the island. And when you got, you know, so it just went like that. And Larry 3 then started with him being on this desert island. And so it was just a fun continue the story.
Oh, so the desert island, it starts out as a desert island, then it becomes a developed resort island.
Sure, because everything ends up looking like Los Angeles.
You know, today video games, there isn't this novelty of quote-unquote adult video games. It seems that, you know, everything is practically adult. Like, you play Doom, there's tons of violence, football games, another, you know, sports churning. Seems that there was much more personality within the 80s and 90s that you had characters like Larry that was, like, kind of in a cartoon, but was like, I'm not just your average video game character. I'm this kind of funny adult-wise thing. Kind of like this juvenile, you know, Fritz the cat, you know, or like Rat Fink, you know, this character that's more adult-oriented. For video games, you know, some of the 90s were like Gex. You know, Gex would be like a platformer, but he'd be sailing all these silly popular culture reference things. Then you had like Conker's Bad Fur Day, where it was like based upon a children's game, but it had its own, you know, adult version. Today, you don't see that. It's more like people are now going into these weird escapist video games where it's like No Man's Land, where you just like get lost in a second reality, and people take video games too seriously as, you know, almost virtual reality at this point. It seems like there's been this loss that of these old school novelty video games where it's kind of about that comical aspect of the, you know, adult humor. I don't know if there can be adult games today because everything seems so relative in general, you know?
I think if you come up with a funny video game, I would love to know about it because I'd like to play it. I haven't, I've kind of stopped playing games. I play some strategy games and some other stuff, but no, for the most part, I just have kind of given up on games just because I have the feeling that I've seen it all before. You know, there's nothing new. And, you know, with film doesn't make technological advances be its only reason for being. And I think for 10 years or 15 years, video games have just said, well, we're going to do higher tech. We're going to do better graphics. We're going to do better physics. We're going to do better this. We're going to do look at there's droplets running down the plant leaves and stuff. Well, that's nice. But on the other hand, I'd rather have a good story. I'm still of the opinion that people read books and novels and watch movies because they appreciate engaging characters in a story that's plausible and believable and yet stretches their imaginations. So I don't know. To me, I would much rather see a funny game and play a funny game than to and to laugh than to become very serious and just mostly try and kill people. You know, it's just there's so much.
Well, there's drama games that, like the Last of Us and like I said, No Man's Sky. It's this, you know, it's basically you're lost in.
But it's very serious.
Yes, it is. It's like deadly
yeah,
serious.
I mean. I haven't played it, but I know when I read about it, it was like, I don't think so. So I don't know. I read a lot. I stay up with current events. I read the New York Times from cover to cover every day, and I read you know, a lot of current events kind of stuff. And I watch a lot of film, so I'm much more of a movie buff today than I am a video game guy.
There's this new trend of making video games into films. Do you think at some point has someone ever approached you about making a Leisure Suit Larry film, either an animated one or live action?
Yes and yes. We've got the first, I think the first serious offer was from Sony back in 1988. They were talking about doing a show that would be on after Married with Children, and and portray Larry. But the deal with that was, we like your character a lot. We'll
was
give
it
you
animated a, or live action.
They were going to do animated, but they said we like your game a lot. Give us the character. We'll give you a little bit of money, and then you'll lose all control. And it was like, well, no, we're selling games. We like what we're doing. So it's we just kind of never pursued it very much. And over the years, various studios have licensed the rights for the games, but the rights to Larry's. But I've never heard of a script getting. I've heard of scripts being written. In fact, there were several back in. Oh, the Jim Carrey days. They had written several scripts for him to do Larry, and he chose to do Cable Guy instead. So that tells you something. I'm not sure what, but that was that piece in time, and I'm sure there have been other. Producers who are willing to do it, but movies are a weird business because you know you have to convince people that you're going to do it. You have to convince some people to give you the money. You've got to convince actors to sign on, and it's all a juggling, keeping lots and lots of balls in the air at the same time. And so far, nobody has. Played with Larry's balls correctly. I'm sure that's probably not the right way to phrase that. But.
I saw a calendar made based on the different female characters from Larry.
Yeah, we put that in the box with Larry 6. I think that was one of the tchotchkes in the package. Remember back when software had boxes?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long time ago.
I know, you know, I'm fed up today with the whole gamer culture. I feel like what has happened is like what was once like a 90s, like I was in the 90s period. What felt was like a novelty, like, yeah, video games. You install them on your computer and sometimes they're, but we still like distanced themselves and said, these are games, like board games, right? Or, you know, card games. Today, it's like a lifestyleism and a culture. Now there's this whole gamer thing that started in 2010. These young millennials who think they're like living anime characters and they cosplay.
Right. They like, if you like just start cosplaying as Larry.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But they're so obsessed with like Japanese video games and they don't like the only American video games they'll play like is what? Undertale, which is pretty much based upon Japanese games. It's like people, Americans have lost their sense of like historical video game history. Stuff like Leisure Suit Larry, you know?
I think there are people are, let's see, what was the phrase that I heard? people are strange, and people are stranger than you've ever thought they were strange. So there's something for everybody, you know. There's a lot, you know. I remember 25 years ago, I judged a Leisure Suit Larry lookalike contest. I mean, the guys dressed up as Larry and women dressed up as Patty, and that had to be 25 years ago. That was forever.
But it's like, yeah. Pillator has this slogan, I'm Pillator, let's make anime real. Has anyone came out here and said, like, let's make Leisure Suit Larry real, let's like implement this into real life?
Well, I think Larry's really close to some of that reality. I mean, it's, you know, it's a funny type of different, that's what's cool about it. I mean, like, what I'm saying is, today, gamer culture would be so triggered. You know, all the SJWs would come out and say, like, how, you know, well, male Larry Suit Larry is, you know?
What's interesting is that, is like, that things have gotten so politically correct, but, you know, in, like, Grand Theft Auto and games like that, like, you know, you can run people over and you can just do all kinds of, like, this, like, wild, violent stuff, but, like, you know, some of like the jokes in like Leisure Suit Larry would probably never fly. You know, they would
or
be
even
like
the
there'd
scene
be protests
where, with the tranny. I mean, that would be political.
Right. In Leisure Suit Larry, there's that the Chablis or whatever is that ends up being like a tranny who ends up like you know, ends up like I guess like raping Larry. Basically, it's not shown or whatever, but clearly he's like on the beach vomiting. You know, like the crying game or something. It's like it's totally like.
And
I
want it known, I want to state firmly here that I designed that scene and wrote that whole business 3 months before anybody in the team knew about the crying game. I was so pissed off because it takes about a year to do a game. And so I thought, oh, this is going to be so clever. It's going to turn out to be a guy. Oh, how smart. And then goddamn Crying Game came out. And I went, oh, man, everybody's going to think I ripped off Crying Game. In order. I did it first, but we didn't get it out in time. So
I have the issue with I'm working on a book. And then, like, I did some whole character. And there's some weird, like, golden shower thing, and then right like a few weeks later the whole like Trump scandal with the rumors about like the prostitutes came out in golden showers. Like, damn, like I should have put out that book earlier.
Yep.
But yeah, it's today it seems that Larry will not go through because of all his like background. Like, it's cool that there's some reboot games of like trying to get like the classic series, and the Reloaded game that came out in 2013. You know, I would like to see maybe some redos of the original because it kind of makes people rediscover their past. Because I think when there's new generations, they literally forget. They literally don't know their past history and just assume new events in time is created. Like, one person might think, you know, this video game is like cutting edge and violent, and they tend to forget, you know, another game was a part of the first and pinnacle. I don't know, it's weird, and it's very competitive, and it's like you have to make some kind of really high-paying institution to, like, make people believe this is it. Like, let's suppose, like, if everyone says, yeah, Street Fighter, it's the first fighting game. I was like, wait a second, there were fighting games before Street Fighter, but it's just this institution that tells you over and over and over again that you want to believe, that keeps it up, this culture, you know, right? And so
those who do not learn history are condemned to repeat it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm basically saying, but they'll repeat it in weird ways. Yep. Where they're going to forget about it. And I just feel like Larry needs more. I don't know what the future of Larry holds, you know, but I feel as though that at least maybe this whole reboot culture we're seeing, right? Everybody wants to do reboot the Samurai Jack reboot. I love that. And I think that there's definitely some tradition that could happen. So as long as it's in the right hands of the property, you tell people about historical
backgrounds. If anyone's listened this far to this podcast and they're interested in the game, they should download Leisure Suit Larry Reloaded and prove that there is a market for new games that made from old games, because we did our best, the best we could with that game, and it sold for a while. But it quickly got submerged beneath the waves and waves of new games that are issued every week. And so it, you know, it sold for a while, but there was no way to keep our head above water. And so we decided not to do any more remakes.
Your other game, Torin's Passage, is that one more, would you say more family friendly?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes.
What,
Rabbit, have you played that one? I haven't played that one.
That's our deep secrets.
I haven't played it.
Yeah, it's our secrets. None of us really.
I haven't played that one. I'm curious about the Reloaded game because we haven't talked about it much. I've seen it. I haven't played it. I actually, you know, I'm still like buying some of the old ones. Like I bought the CD for $6 like on eBay like last year, and
nice.
Which, you know, you're not going to get any money for that purchase, but still, like, the, you know,
I don't get any money still, from Reloaded either, or any of the good old games, the games still, that are sold on the GOG site, you know, I don't get anything for those.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully that these podcasts will continue to, you know, to generate interest. Can you talk a little bit about the Reloaded game? Like, what was, was it more difficult at all, like incorporating, you know, some of the more offensive stuff, you know, 25 years later, or was it a not issue because it was Kickstarter financed and whatnot? You had a lot more leeway to do what you wanted.
Oh, I had plenty of leeway to do what I wanted the first time. It was no different. We did what we wanted to do. The best censor that I had was my wife. You know, I would, if I was in doubt, I would yell in and say, "Hey, what do you think, honey? Can I do this?" And if she'd say, "Oh, I don't know," then I'd do it. And if she said, "What? No," then I would leave it out.
What was your most outrageous idea that you decided to censor out of the game?
I can't tell you that. It's censored.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean like, you know, like then compared to now, but more like because the Reloaded was made with like, you know, backers and whatnot, as opposed to going through like a major, like a corporate gaming structure that would have, that might have, you know, might have inhibited you in some way.
Was that a question?
Oh no! I just clarifying.
Oh, okay.
I know you could do what you wanted basically the first time, but you know, in the time since then, like a lot of those, you know, those companies seem to be like they want a lot more control. There's more bureaucracy in those. I'm assuming.
Yeah, but
in a lot of those gaming corporations.
But also, community standards have changed a lot too, so you can get you can get away with a lot more now than you could back then.
You know what? I remember when I was like 7 years old, my neighbor was playing Turin's Passage, and I was like, I thought that game was so weird. It was like this pink dog thing and a guy with a red suit, kind of looked like a Don Bluth, like Titan AE or some one of those weird like blue films or something. And I don't know, I just remember he had a really laggy computer playing that, and I was watching my neighbor do it, and I was like, I couldn't tell whether it was a cartoon or a game. But I do have, like, I never played it, but I do have distinct memories of these pictures in my head, along with like Chex Quest. You know, these strange games that you tend to forget, and they're like in weird out. I don't know. They're kind of interesting, but now I'm looking at pictures of Torrance Passage. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. It's kind of like, whoa, it's like gems
well,
of the past.
For that game, we tried to do Disney style animation, and we also had a wonderful lead animator, art director on the film, who was only at Sierra for a year or two and then went to Pixar and has been really successful at Pixar too. So I'm very proud to say that helped Jim get into the business, and he just ended up directing the short that came out with the about 6 months ago about the ukulele accompaniment and the volcano who fell in love with the other volcano, and I can't say the name of it right now, I've forgotten, but it was really cool to see his name on that Pixar team. So and several others of the people that I hired at Sierra that have gone on to Pixar and to do great work at other places as well. So
No, I think it's interesting because it's like there are just so many games in my head that like I remember seeing that I never played, but like I could remember the name if somebody was to tell me about it, and then like years later I'll go find it and be like, oh yeah, I remember that. Like, I seriously have this like picture in my head of like this edition of Earthworm Jim where the level was this and the music is exactly like that. And it turns out like the Super Nintendo or Genesis was not like that, but it's supposedly the PC special edition my neighbor would have. And I would fall in love with that aesthetic of like the level 2 Earthworm Jim aesthetic where it gives me like, I'm kind of like, I'm into music myself. And I feel like that music really brings out like weird nostalgia and you're kind of like lost in this kind of area you cannot recreate again. I don't know. And I kind of love like Windows 95 music for some reason, especially in those weird MIDI files. They give me like chills.
Wow. That's a first. I've never heard that statement before.
Like I'm saying Torrent's Passage is like more of like, I didn't like play with it, but I remember it in like some weird obscure feels memory where it's like, I don't care about the plot, but it's more like a certain place in your life when I was young and some kind of strange. And then you want to recreate a bastardized version of Turin's Passage and make it more artistic.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Like with Vaporwave.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing with like aesthetics and like the music of all the video games and a lot of different things. Like when it first comes out, I mean, people enjoy playing the game. But then later on, like people get really passionate about the aesthetics and the music. And that's, it goes back to what you were saying.
I always have this weird thing with the band My Bloody Valentine and their song, or no, their album Loveless. And I think that whole album is basically filled with like Earthworm Jim and Turin's Passage like clips. And it's like it came out during that same time, so it makes absolute sense. And it's kind of strange.
Well, this has been fun, you guys. I've enjoyed talking about this stuff.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, well, good. And you know, if I'd like to encourage people to go to my website, allowe.com, 6 letters. It's real easy, Allowe, because I've got lots of stories there about the old days. I've got lots of humor, hundreds of pages of links and things and humor and graphics and music you can download and some of my early games that you can download. And you can sign up for my free daily joke email. I have, for the past 20 years, I've sent out 2 jokes every weekday morning, one of which is clean. So you guys can all subscribe, and I'll start your morning off with a smile.